This is VK6 Amateur Radio News with News West for Sunday the 20th of March 2022. Today is the autumn equinox and we should be experiencing better results in the higher frequency HF bands. And today is the History of Amateur Radio edition of News West and we take a peek at what happened in years gone by. One item today is a brief story about John Moyle, in whose memory this weekend's field day is named. There's another story entitled The Mosquito from Mac VK6MM, reminiscing on his early days in amateur radio. And then we have the amateur radio helpline from Roy, VK6XV, what would it be without Roy? And this week's episode of News West is a bit shorter than usual, partly because of the early deadline due to the preparations for the John Moyle Memorial Field Day. I'm Bob VK6PAP, the News West producer, and later on I'll introduce you to the team.
John Moyle was a long-time editor of Wireless Weekly magazine from 1947 until his untimely death in 1960. He served in the RAAF with distinction and was responsible for a number of innovative solutions to keeping radio and radar equipment working under difficult wartime and working conditions. We extracted this item from the Port Macquarie News and the Hastings River Advocate in November 1947. It was reprinted from the Radio and Hobbies magazine of April that year. The price exacted from this country by bushfires in loss of property and lives is a terrible one. I use the word price because so much of it is paid through our own neglect and lack of preparedness. We shall probably never prevent bushfires altogether, but we can reduce them by using care and common sense. We must reduce their damage by employing every modern aid in fighting and controlling them. The setting up of a satisfactory radio network for firefighting is quite a task. Firstly, there's the problem of setting down a general basis of operation, which in part or full will meet the needs of the local geography, and at the same time maintain a common basis to allow several shires, if necessary, to work together with a common method of procedure. This calls for standardisation of equipment, careful selection of frequencies, and standardisation of training and maintenance. The aim should be to provide a national emergency network capable of operating as units within the local shires or being coordinated on a big scale should the emergency be large enough to warrant it. It even includes air support in those areas where large-scale fires are likely to occur. In the case of small fires, things happen so quickly and the area is so restricted that communication other than by word of mouth is in many cases impractical. But little fires always start the big ones, and when the outbreak becomes more than a few men in a paddock can control, the shire as a whole becomes interested, and organised fighting becomes into action. In such cases, communication, both rapid and flexible, must be ready and waiting. The first requirement, therefore, is a radio link between the officer who is controlling the operations and the parties which set out to execute them. In most cases, these parties set out in cars and trucks, splitting up into smaller units according to the extent and nature of the fire. The brigade captain wants communication to each of these main parties and also to the local shire offices or maybe the broadcasting station, which if required can issue general warnings and other appropriate messages on the ordinary band frequency. In addition to the two links in the chain, there may be many occasions when the close support of walkie-talkies or similar portable equipment will be required to communicate with the leader of each small party, who in turn can relay messages back to the officer in control as appropriate. Using this general scheme as a basis, almost any type of outbreak can be controlled in a manner not possible by other means. The first step, however, is to interest the shires themselves in the scheme and to encourage them to use what equipment is available to supplement their present methods and to train their personnel in the use of radio generally.
The Mosquito by Malcolm MacDonald, recorded 13th of March 2022. There wasn't much general activity on 2 metres when I first got going on air. Most of the HF amateurs at the time favoured 6 metres. So it was a logical step to create some 6-metre gear. I had already built a converter for receiving, so the next step was a transmitter of some sort. and took a fancy to the possibility of portable operation, and so set to accordingly. Bowers was still king for anything RF. The lineup consisted of a 12BY7A crystal oscillator and doubler, a 6CH tripler, and a 5763 final, which was plate modulated using a pair of power transistors in Class B via a suitable modulation transformer, the windings of which were created by Charles Cassina, no less. The high tension was supplied by one of my salvage ferrite core types. Unfortunately, some of the switching transients from the power supply managed to leak into the modulator, which resulted in a low background buzz on the transmission. Someone said it sounded like a mosquito, and the name stuck. It got used from home and also on portable excursions. One such occasion was at Mount William, where a three-element beam was tied to the old wooden fire lookout tower and fed by a 300-ohm ribbon cable. On a couple of other contest occasions, John Kitchen and I used a pushed up pipe mast in the bush near North Dandalup in order to get a contest distance multiplier to Perth. The mosquito wasn't strictly confined to the amateur band. The veteran car club of which I was a member had a weekend timed rally to Mandurah, camping overnight in the old SEC caravan park. I had a number of disposals crystals which resulted in an output frequency just below 50 MHz, and applied to the local radio branch for permission to use this frequency for liaison during the rally. The radio branch in WA had more decision-making powers then, and permission was duly granted, but we had to have all transmitters properly netted. The mosquito went on air for a radio inspector to listen, and its frequency adjusted as per instructions received by telephone. All other participating stations were supposed to net to it, but I suspect many units did not even have that capability. Stations were set up at the rally checkpoints and at times recorded and forwarded back to Perth via a relay station on Mount Solis. It was all good fun, but effectiveness as far as relaying rally results was concerned was not so successful. By the time the relay station on Mount Solis had got to the end of the list, the results had already been taken back to Perth by car. On another occasion, an amateur borrowed it for the weekend to try his luck on 6 metres from Bunbury. Those Bunbury residents keen enough to watch television needed to put up things like phased arrays on masts up to 100 foot tall and wait for evening propagation to give them sufficient signal from Bickley. They didn't get to successfully watch much TV that weekend. The interference created couldn't have been impossibly bad, though, as on another occasion I received a telephone call from the radio branch. A woman who lived 5 streets away in Netherlands had lodged a complaint about interference to her television reception. Being west from me, her antenna would have been pointed in my direction. I was ordered to keep off air until in due course a radio inspector turned up to check things out, and the mosquito was set up on the driveway in front of my garage and connected to a beam. The plan was for him to visit the woman's place and set up his test gear, and then at an arranged time I would transmit for 10 minutes while he searched for any spurious transmissions. Nothing found. Her TV set was an Admiral with a 25 MHz intermediate frequency rather than the Australian standard 36 MHz. So she was told her set was at fault and the mosquito was cleared to take to the air again. I can't remember how I disposed of it, but was lucky to have been in 1966 along with a lot of other gear before I went overseas for a year. I still have a hand sketch schematic of the RF section though.
We confirmed last week that we're having another go at putting on Perth Tech in 2022 and that it would be on the weekend of the 21st to the 23rd of October, with the main activity, the technical presentations, being on Saturday the 22nd. So we're off and running with organising Perth Tech and are in the process of securing a venue for that date. We've notified potential trade table holders of the date, asking them to mark their diaries. Clubs and special interest groups are welcome to set up a static display as well. But you will need to book a table. Shortly we'll be calling for expressions of interest from potential presenters, and we've already started priming some from other states to consider coming over. In previous years we've conducted a raffle to provide the funds to stage Perth Tech and to offer it to you at no cost except for a small fee to cover your lunch. We ran a raffle in 2021 and because we had to cancel Perth Tech, we've still got the loot in the bank, so we decided that we didn't need to run another raffle this year. However, don't you love howevers? However, as we always have some sort of a day raffle, the committee decided to expand on that a bit and have raffle prizes that would make you really glad that you attended and won a prize. I wonder what that could be. How about something in the ballpark of $1,500 and a couple of minor prizes? What would interest you? Help us out by sending your suggestions to perthtech@vk6.net. Perthtech, PERTHTECH, no spaces. perthtech@vk6.net. And suggest what you might like to win for a raffle prize at Perthtech. We'd also like to invite other clubs or groups to donate minor prizes towards a day raffle, and we'll remind you later in the year. The thing you need to do right now is to keep the date clear for Perthtech. Here's a quick outline. It's the weekend, 21 to 23 October. We're aiming at caravan and camper parking on site for Friday and Saturday nights, with activities on Friday night that involve playing with radios. The symposium on Saturday and the sundowner afterwards, and where there's a demand for it, workshops on the Sunday. We already have expressions of interest from interstate amateurs, so it's going to be a good show. Perthtech is brought to you by WA Amateur Radio News.
This is VK6ARN, and you're listening to News West.
Daily Telegraph, Sydney, Tuesday, the 4th of October, 1938. Worldwide Radio Contest. A worldwide amateur radio contest organised in New South Wales will take place during October. It will be sponsored by the Wireless Institute of Australia and the New Zealand Amateur Transmitting League. Australian and New Zealand amateurs who made most foreign contacts would receive trophies, said Mr. W. I. Ryan, the contest manager. Trophies would also be awarded to operators in each country who made most contacts with Australia and New Zealand. Special grant, the contest was held annually, Mr. Ryan said. But there was increased interest this year as the event was officially part of the 150th anniversary celebrations. A special grant of £100 had been made by the government to the New South Wales Division of the Wireless Institute, which would control the contest. Judging would take place in Sydney, but because of the amount of checking involved, results would not be known for some months. There were approximately 2,000 amateur operators in Australia, and it was expected that a big proportion would take part.
A few people noticed the typo in our promotional graphic for last week and took advantage of it and teased me. We had a giggle over it. Of course, it was all my fault, but there you go. I promise it won't happen again. Until next time. Now for Wireless Institute of Australia members, in case you missed the memo, the Wireless Institute's annual general meeting and virtual conference is being held on Saturday, May the 7th, 2022. Full details are at the WIA's website. Now this week marks the anniversary of the loss to the amateur community in Western Australia of two prominent amateurs in 2016, and those were VK6YL Poppy, who was one of the pioneers of the Western Australian repeater group, and VK6 Yellow Submarine Wally, whose exploits in IOTA and D expeditions were well known. Of course, Wally was a member of the News West team as well. Now, are you a budding CW user but haven't been able to launch into it? Or as a CW operator, you're old and rusty? Here's the thing for you. To encourage new and old CW operators, the PL Amateur Radio Group holds 80-metre on-air slow CW QSO exchange sessions on most Tuesday afternoons from 1700 hours Western Australian time. You can find the group operating from 3540, that's 3540 kilohertz, through to 3570 kilohertz for the practice that begins at 0900 Zulu, so you got both times. During the week, the ACMA launched consultation number 12 of 2022 concerning its draft five-year spectrum outlook. The ACMA is seeking information and opinions on a range of spectrum management issues, and these include amateur radio. I've had a brief look at it and make these few comments. We're looking down the barrel of class licensing for amateur radio, and at this stage it's probably a given that this will happen. The regulator is considering changes to the application process for repeater and beacon licences, where presently all applications are meant to go via the Wireless Institute of Australia, and in the ACMA's words, this adds an unnecessary delay to the process. And again, they're considering the transmit power limits for amateurs in Australia. However, there appears to be some however lurking in there. We need to do some work on that. There's more, and I recommend that you read the document. It's a searchable PDF, so you can cherry-pick all the bits with amateur radio included. So here's what you do next. If you have an opinion or want to reinforce one or more ideas, you can make a private submission. No doubt the Wireless Institute of Australia and RASA might have some more to say on it too.
Almost every week, except when we forget, you're reminded to hang around for callbacks. And if you can't give a callback on air, we encourage you to use our online callback facility at vk6.net. This online callback collection point isn't really about numbers. However, it's very useful for other purposes in that it offers you a chance to make comments or give feedback. Positive feedback telling us how wonderful we are is always welcome, because apart from massaging the ego, it helps us to know that we're doing okay. And you can always tell us if you disagree with something or would like to add to something we've said. If your feedback is going to be a bit of a story, or better still, a story that can be put on air on News West, send it via email to newswest@vk6.net. By the way, what you put in on the online callbacks isn't available for public viewing, and sometimes when we quote feedback on News West, there's no name or means of identifying the author given. Your callbacks and feedback can be recorded at vk6.net. Click on the brown button that says Record Callbacks Here.
News West is produced by WA Amateur Radio News, an amateur radio club in Western Australia. News West is compiled primarily for Western Australian amateurs. However, our audience is considerably wider, with regular national and international listeners. The studio team this week is Mike, VK6KMS, Roy, VK6X-ray, Victor, Andrew, VK6AS. I'm Bob, VK6POP, the News West producer. News West can be heard on air, online, and via your favourite podcast app. Visit our website, vk6.net, to find out where and how to listen and to download News West. News West continues the amateur radio news service that began in Perth in 1931. Our club callsign is VK6ARN, and you're listening to VK6 Amateur Radio News.
Something that happens in amateur radio, and thankfully so, is a steady influx of newcomers to the hobby. Indeed, just this week, a new cohort has arrived. Something else that happens in amateur radio is a seemingly equal outflow of people leaving the hobby. That's a whole other discussion, and certainly one worth having at another time. It's pretty important for the hobby to retain newcomers, to nurture and encourage them to grow in the hobby. One way we can do that is to make them feel welcome, informed, and included in this great hobby. Next week, News West turns its focus on newcomers to amateur radio with the new Amateurs Edition. How was your entry to the hobby? Would you like to tell us your story? Our email address is newswest@vk6.net. Why not talk to us?
The Northern Corridor's Radio Group's raffle is still running. It's got about 10 days left. There was an email sent to WA Hams on Thursday afternoon, and then there is a link to where you can buy your tickets. So if you haven't bought your tickets and you intend to, you better do it pretty darn quick. Otherwise, you'll miss out, because it's a wonderful prize. The first prize is the FTDX-10. That's a Yaesu FTDX-10, which is a HF 50 megahertz 100 watt SDR transceiver. And it looks fantastic. It's got this big touch screen thing at the front, and it's even got knobs to make it look like a real radio. So that's a fantastic first prize. It's worth just over $2,000. Second prize is worth nearly $600, which is an FT3DR, which is a dual band handheld radio. 2 meters 70 centimeters with a color display. It looks pretty nice. And the third prize is a mobile radio, dual band FM, C4 FM, dual band digital mobile. And that looks pretty neat too. So I wouldn't mind winning any of those prizes. But anyway, as I said, if you haven't got a ticket yet, get over there and get one. You can buy them online using a credit or debit card, and you can also pay cash if that's all you do these days. get the sock out from under the bed and head off to the NCRG club rooms at Whiteman Park on Sunday mornings, and you can disturb the moths in your sock and pay cash. Anyway, that's their raffle, that's their free advertisement, and you never, never know if you don't buy a ticket.
This is NewsWest from VK6ARN, produced by amateurs for amateurs, purely about the hobby of amateur communication and experimentation.
Well, this is not Roy's helpline. I don't know what's happened to Roy. I've messaged him a few times and emailed him, but for some reason he hasn't responded to the early deadline, so I hope he's okay. But anyway, Roy's helpline is where you can acquire or dispose of your pre-loved goods, and you can contribute to Roy's amateur radio helpline by sending an email to vk6xrayvictor@bigpond.com. That's pretty easy. vk6xrayvictor@bigpond.com. So let's give Roy a big flood of stuff to talk about next week. So sorry to miss you, Roy. We'll catch up next time. You've either been listening to or have just missed News West. Not my own words, but those of my predecessor, Dennis, VK6KAD, Silent Key. For those of you who did the John Moyle contest, I hope you had a fruitful and enjoyable weekend, and I look forward to hearing some stories about your experiences. Thanks to the studio team, broadcasting team, and to those who maintain repeaters and make their own equipment available for broadcasts and callbacks, you're a well-oiled machine. Next week we're talking to new amateurs, and there's room for old amateurs to listen in too. If you're listening on air, please stick around for callbacks afterwards, and if listening by some other method, go to vk6.net and record your callback and your feedback there. Then all you have left to do is to get on air and to make some noise.